Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry April, everyone!
Almost May.
Almost May. It's Saturday, the 27th day of April, Anno Domini 2019, and you, ho, ho, you lucky frozen people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. And of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
The airplane group, we're going to have an organizational meeting today for the summer picnic and our air show and everything. And he said, rain or shine, we're going to meet at the field. And crap, it's snowing. I never said snow.
Before we get started, happy birthday, Tony Placilla and Phil Dampier. Sure, I've forgotten somebody else, but I know that their birthdays were this week. Microsoft has published a support document warning Windows 10 users that the impending May 2019 update may not install on their systems if they use external USB storage devices or SD cards.
Which you should for backup.
Which you always should for backup. Microsoft cited problems with, and I quote, inappropriate drive reassignment. I don't know if that means they named them swear words. I don't know what that's about. As the main reason for blocking the May 2019 update, inappropriate drive reassignment can occur on eligible computers that have an external USB device or SD memory card attached during the installation of the May 2019 update, they said. For this reason, these computers are currently blocked from receiving the May 2019 update. Fortunately, there's a quick and simple workaround for this issue. Just remove any external USB or SD media and restart the May 2019 update installation. This includes USB thumb drives, USB-based external hard drives, or SD cards inserted into card reader devices, whether they're attached directly, they're built into your machine, or they're external. Unless users are running Windows 10 from one of these devices, which is highly unlikely, most users will be able to work around this issue. In the long run, Microsoft plans to address the inappropriate drive reassignment issue in a future Windows 10 service update. Microsoft won't block the May 2019 update for all Windows users, but only those running the April 2018 update, which is Windows 10 version 1803, or the October 2018 update, Windows 10 version 1809. Users using older versions of Windows 10 will be able to move to the May 2019 update without problems. As its name implies, the May 2019 update will be released next month. Windows 10 users can delay the company's semi-annual update if they wish. For eager users, the May 2019 update packages are already available on MSDN. Now, I do have a poll, but of course the poll software isn't fixed. I may just have to bite the bullet and find different poll software. But of course, you can give us a call about this. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And of course, you can join us in the forums. Under 27 April 19, Win 10 update blocked. We're really getting to the point where you can't call the Windows update team anything but a bunch of stumble bums, at least on the radio. What's it been, a year and a half since there was an actual good update that didn't cause any trouble?
I think it might be even a little longer than that.
And you got to give them a little credit for the myriad of configurations that can cause problems. But having a USB drive connected, that's been so common.
Yeah, USB's been around
forever.
Yeah.
Well, and so many people have plugged in memory cards or flash drives and forgotten about them.
Well, we get computers
in for service all the time where there's a card sticking out of the ready to break off.
That was one thing with Windows, though. That was one of the nice things with the USB, that you could do quick pull them out. You didn't have to always, mount, unmount. They pretty much...
Well, that's actually been gone for a while, but they're putting it back. So in one of the things the May update gives you is the ability to because
but that's maybe what that's what's going wrong because they're addressing USB thingies.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. But at any rate, it's it, but it only happens on two of the updates. Whatever. But the point is, if you've got permanent USB or SD stuff, you know, a lot of people, you're right, they have the laptops and they've got some sort of an SD card stuck in the thing at all times. Well,
yeah, even their camera card, you know, people have that plugged in all the
right.
time.
I mean, but this is something that's not new. This is something, right. like I said, that was there from when it was just, folks, there was USB, and then there's USB 2, and then 3.
3.1 we're at now.
Right.
Oh, the professional just walked in. You
Ladies
know,
and gentlemen.
And he sits there and says, you know,
Rob Linton.
This is a professional radio show. We're on the air.
If you're listening to the YouTube, and since Steve is here, you can see us on YouTube. There's a camera. There's a camera. Wave to the people.
Hello.
Very nice. Very charming.
I got my keys. I'll be right back.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
You all come back, yeah? No. Whenever
professionals.
He'd be on, you know, I'm on the air. I go, yeah, so?
So? Right. It's okay.
We're easy going here.
He's the boss.
Here.
He can do what he wants. He got his key. Very nice. Very charming.
You're supposed to use all your fingers to wave.
Carry on with whatever you're doing.
Thank you so much. He also apparently can't find what he's looking for. At any rate, we should probably go to the phones. Well, please ignore the rumbling in the background as Rob rummages around in the cabinets.
I found it.
He found it. He'll be leaving now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. To the phones. Our first caller is John from Gates, New York. Hiya, John. What's up?
Hi, gentlemen. I was wondering if there's a free, easy-to-use photo editor out there. I'm having a hard time deciding which one to download. One that allows you to add text to photos.
Well, GIMP is probably one of the most
common
ones.
That's not easy
ones.
To use.
Yeah.
What you want to do is just add text?
Right. Well, I mean, if there's other options, I would look at them. You know, I'm not too computer savvy, you know, so. But basically to add text and edit, you know.
Yeah. I'm looking at the features of a program called Irfan View.
I'm sorry. What is that?
Hold on a second. Let me see if what it does here before I tell you to go do something with it.
Okay.
Toolbar, multi-file, search, print, change color, add overlay text. Okay. So it's a program called Irfan View. IRFAF as in Frank, AN View.
Oh, okay.
Irfan View, all one word. Steve's going to put up a link. It comes in both 64 and 32-bit versions. So download whichever one. If you've got 64-bit Windows, you should have the 64-bit version, et cetera, et cetera. But it does a whole lot of stuff, including text, adding text overlays.
Great. Well, thank you so much, and I really enjoy your program. You give me a lot of information.
Thanks. What version of Windows are you running?
Windows 10.
Yep, it'll work for 10. Yeah, not a problem.
Okay, thanks again.
Yep, good luck.
And on the Macintosh side, we have the Photos app, which comes with the Mac. The trick is the titling is one word that it uses, or text overlay is another word it uses. In the Mac, it's markup.
Markup, they call it. Okay.
So, because one of the things you can mark up, which is interesting, because you are marking up your photo.
Right.
That's a very old word.
Yeah.
And you can mark it up with text or lines, so you can circle something in on top of the photo, but you can mark up with text, and that's now built in. It's one of those features a lot of people don't realize are in there, because we get questions all the time, how do I add a title to my photo? Well, you just click this button over here that says markup. Well, I didn't know what that meant.
Okay. Right. No, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. Absolutely. Yeah, Steve mentioned the GIMP, which is the GNU image manipulation program, and it's been around for quite a while. And a lot of people, it's free. It's 100% free and open source, and so a lot of people use it as a replacement for Photoshop
and cross platform.
And it is cross platform. It runs on pretty much anything with a keyboard. And we do have a lot of people who use it, and we see that pretty often. But in terms of, so if you need, if you're looking for a free Photoshop replacement, that's an awfully good one. But if what you're really looking for is something that simply does things like add text, there's probably a thousand of them. Irfan View does the one of the nice things about Irfan View is it reads pretty much every format on the planet. It does the markup. It does a whole bunch of other stuff. It's also free, but it also has a nice front end. And I'm sure there's 50 people calling in about their favorite as well. But there's also online things you can do and all kinds of stuff. But one of the easiest and most popular ones is Irfan View. It also has lots and lots of plugins. So if there's other stuff you want to do, you don't have to go find another program to do that and another program to do that and another program to do that. Irfan View pretty much will do any and all of it fairly easily and fairly quickly. So if you're looking for something that does, thank you, if you're looking for something that does one or two things easily, start with Irfan View, because as you progress and as you need more stuff, you'll find that Irfan View does that for you. So, and did Steve put up a, Steve put up a link for that and the GIMP, so you should be able to get at both. We're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm hanging in there. Another simple way to add text is right in Windows 10. It has its own way of adding text right in the photo viewer.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's really easy if you want something basic. It does work fairly well.
Excellent.
Yeah, and once you open the photo with it, there's an edit option at the top right hand of the screen, and you go in there, and there's a bunch of choices that you can do. And one is text and 3D text.
Perfect. Oh, 3D text. Very sexy.
Ooh, cool. Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, Mark.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So as you can see, there's 100,000 different ways to do it. Pick the one that makes you happy and knock yourself out. That's the beautiful thing about most of the software, most of the operating systems that are out there. There are so many programs for each of them that it can be a daunting task to find something that meets all your criteria, simple and yada yada yada, right down the line. But certainly, Windows 10 Photo Viewer is already on your machine. And it certainly can't hurt to give it a try. It's probably quite simple.
You may need a newer version of Windows 10. I just found a tech note inside Microsoft from July 2015. It says there is no way to add text in Windows 10 Photo Viewer. Use Microsoft Paint.
Oh, okay. Oh.
And then, same day, someone pointed back, "Hi, I'm the engineer on Photos, and I will pass your feature request along."
Very nice.
And so apparently they did. So I bet if I go to the end of this thread, I might be able to find out how to do it.
Right. If depending on which version, of course, that's the other problem with Windows. You can have a version of Windows 10 that's, there's at least four of them out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
So your mileage may vary.
Couldn't call it 10.1 or 10.2 or 10.3 because that would be easy to remember.
Windows 10 1809, Windows 10.
Used to do the Surface Pack, SP1, SP2.
Yep.
Right.
That's what they should be labeling them as.
Right. Everybody's doing the thing that Linux does, right? You're running Ubuntu 1804, which means it came out in April of 2018. Or 1809. This came out in September of 2018. Mm-hmm. So that's the way they label them. So that, and what's nice about that, I have to say, is now you know how far back you are.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
If somebody comes up and says, "Hey, I wrote this thing. It's about 6 months old." Oh, well, I'm running 1804, so I probably don't have that available to me. I'd have to upgrade to 1809 to get something that's 6 months ago.
On the other side of that, because we've seen this before, suddenly your 1703 feels really old.
Yeah.
And if they haven't released an update in 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Right. Well, Linux does that quite regularly.
Yeah.
And that's part of Microsoft's deal. They had been... dinged before about the lack of regular updates. And so that's when they started using the year month thing as well. So, it makes it easier. Yeah, it makes it easier. So there's you can look and see which version you're running, and that tells you how long it's been since you updated and which version you're in. As you heard in our first story, only the 1804 and the 1809 versions have problems with the USB update. So there's a serious effort on Microsoft's part to keep to this every 6 month update business, twice a year update business.
Yeah,
and so far they've been pretty good about it.
I would say, well, they've been good at getting something out, whether it works right.
Right. They haven't necessarily
that's
been
a
good
whole other bailiwick that I wouldn't want to touch with a 20-foot pole. Because, you know, they just keep messing it up.
Right. But the fact is that there's just a lot of programs out there. Microsoft, Apple doesn't do it, do they? Do that year month update? They don't.
No, they're still using version numbers and names are now. So we're running right. Mojave.
Right.
So that
tells me nothing.
Right. 10.14.
Right. You but have to memorize all of that as if you care.
But they do pretty much annual updates. So it'll be announced at the developer conference in June. You know, so that's now. Everyone's wondering what the next name is going to be. So they went through Cats, and then they're in California Landmarks. We went through the mountains. Now we're into the desert. So inside Mojave,
you need La Brea.
La Brea, yeah.
The tar pits.
Yeah. They joked. During the announcement, they always joke about what it could have been, and one of them I really liked was Rancho Cucamonga.
Oh, I like that. Rancho Cucamonga.
Apologies to any listeners who are actually in Rancho Cucamonga.
Right. Like they don't know that people find that humorous.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, really.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Smiley from Rochester, New York. Hi, Smiley. What's up?
Oh, hey, another program that this gentleman can use. It works in Windows and Linux. It's called Hotshots.
Hotshots. All right. That I have not... I'll be honest with you. I have not played with Hot Shots.
I am a little wary of Googling that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's safe.
We're in a school district.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've used it you can draw arrows. You know, like if you want to point something out on a photograph.
Right.
You can draw arrows to it and, write stuff in there. It's a good little program.
Oh yeah, look at this! My goodness, it's quite a nice little piece of software.
Looks like
there.
It's open source too. That's even better.
And it's open. It runs on BSD, Windows, and Linux. Very cool. Very cool.
I'll listen to the rest.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hang up.
Yep. Thank you.
Right.
So if it runs on BSD, I could theoretically recompile it for the BSD I'm running, right?
Yes, you could. Yes, you actually could. That's the beauty. Of course, of open source, you get the source code. If you want to, you can do recompiling and make it work on anything. Although I would just do a search. You can't be the first guy to want to do that.
Find a native Mac version.
Right. I bought. Okay. My beloved bride.
Uh-oh.
Whom I love.
Does your wife know?
Whom I love very, very deeply, has been using a Mac for many, many years, and it died.
Oh.
So I said, all right, we'll get you a new Mac. She said, no, I want a Windows machine. I said, why do you want a Windows machine? She said, well, because I have a Windows machine at work, and now I can, I can set them up identically, and I don't have to fumble around ever. I said, okay, whatever
fair.
You want, which is how I've stayed
happy
married
wife.
For since 1980, whatever many years
yep.
it is. So yes, so whatever you want. So we went out and bought her a Windows machine. Well, now I know why I don't run Windows anymore. Jeez and crackers! It took hours to update.
Even with your connection.
Even with my it ran an update, then it ran an update, then it ran an update, then it ran an update.
updated.
Yeah, I gotcha.
And it's a very fast machine. It's got a lot of RAM. It's a beautiful little laptop, but it took a while.
What one did you get her?
I got her, now you're going to ask, VivoBook, an Asus okay. VivoBook.
Ooh.
14, very nice machine.
Nice.
Very nice machine, 8 gig of RAM, i5 processor, yada, yada, yada. So she's very happy. And that's really all that ever counts.
The key words?
Yes, dear.
And my blood pressure has gone back down. Right, right. I did. The part of the problem is when you log in, you give it a username and password. Then when you go to install Office, you have to. It insisted I get an
Microsoft
account.
Yep.
So I had to go do that, which meant I had to. Because I was doing it instead of my wife, of course, I wanted it to be in her name, so I had to keep go finding her and say, give me your
thing
so we can look it up, because it would send her an email, so we had to get the email. Then it would send her a code on her phone. We had to go get the phone to get the code. Yep. And I finally said, why don't you just sit here with me? No, I have things to do.
Okay. Yes, dear.
And you don't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes,
so,
dear.
One of the advantages of having that Microsoft account, we find a lot for both Windows and especially Office, is when you go to reinstall it, or when they come to us and buy a new computer, we need to reinstall their Office, and they can't find their product key.
Yep.
So by registering it online with a Microsoft account, they save your product key to let you reinstall again.
Right.
What we have run out, because I ran into this twice this week, the Office 2011, the activation servers are offline.
Yep.
So even I have the key, it doesn't activate
online.
But
it won't verify.
But they still, and I hope to God they don't stop this, you can call the Microsoft activation phone number.
Mm-hmm. Put in the code.
You have to read them the 50-digit number.
Right.
Yeah.
And then they read you back a 50-digit confirmation code.
Right.
Well, they used to do that with the phone service, too. They'd sit there.
Yeah, you used to have to type, on the touch tone, punch it in. They've gone to voice recognition, which is a little easier.
That would be.
But I messed it up the first time when I got to the. I mixed up the eighth and ninth groups, apparently.
Because
then they said, then read me the last group of digits. I thought I just did. I guess I missed one. So I had to start over.
Yep.
Oops.
But that is kind of nice, being able to not have to worry about finding your product key when you need to install it again. But it's annoying. You have to do it. So now, every time a customer wants us to install Office for them, we have to make an account for them. Or they have to, the account they made 10 years ago for their, Hotmail, we have to figure out what that password was, because you can't make a new account with the same email address. So we have to go in and reset their password to the account they made years ago and don't remember their password anymore.
Right.
So there's always something was it one step forward and 10 steps back?
Yep. But you'll get there.
Yeah.
All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, the return of Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. Holy crow. It's Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Okay, here we go. A British cybersecurity agency has released a list of the 100,000 most commonly used passwords in the world. In other words, the passwords hackers are most likely to try first to turn you into a victim. Britain's National Cybersecurity Center, with an R-E, Centra, revealed the results in its first ever UK cyber survey. You can see the list of the 100,000 most used passwords at the Security Tango. Under Tango Links, which is one of the menu choices, just select Good Passwords. And on that page, you'll see right near the top a link to the 100,000 most hacked passwords. It says be patient, but it actually comes up pretty quickly because I changed how it works. And there it is, the most hacked passwords, 100,000 of them. It's almost entirely alphabetic. There were a couple of of passwords that started with an octothorpe that got into the wrong place, but get over that. And yes, there are swear words, so be warned. There are more than... Also, by the way, if yours is among them, you should change it immediately. And tips on creating more complex but easy-to-remember passwords are on that same Good Passwords page. So be aware of what you need to do for your passwords. More than 23 million people worldwide who still used 123456 as their password. 23 million people who use 123456 as their password were victims of cybercrime, according to the survey.
That's the same password I have on my luggage.
Yeah, exactly. What idiot. Here's a breakdown of the most common passwords that led to security breaches worldwide. 123456. 123456789. Yes, that's better.
Oh, yeah.
QWERTY. Password. And 111111. The most popular names for passwords? Ashley, Michael, Daniel, Jessica, and Charlie.
Probably password, too.
Well, that's part of the top five that led to the most common passwords.
Gotcha.
Password. The most popular musician passwords were Blink-182, 50 Cent, Eminem, Metallica, and Slipknot, proving that people who can't think up passwords have atrocious taste in music. Oh, we're going to get calls. The most popular... Thank you. That was Steve Ray, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, yeah.
The most popular fictional character passwords were Superman, Naruto, Tigger, Pokemon, and Batman.
I'm Batman.
You should use
no,
one
I'm
of...
I'm Batman.
No, I'm Spartacus. You should use one of the several password managers that not only generate very secure passwords, but even store them for you. If, however, you wish to write them all down, don't keep them next to your computer. Put them in a place a potential burglar or others won't think to look, such as your garage. So, are you on the list? Change your passwords immediately, then give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And you will find that that's a pretty long and pretty severe list. You'll find even more passwords at Pwned Passwords, but this,
you can test if your password has been seen in any of the breaches.
Right, but the top 100,000 are in this list. So if you've got a geez and crackers, look at this thing. If you've got a password that's on this list, you need to have changed it about 6 years ago. So be careful. And pretty much every number combination is on here.
Oh, yeah.
So don't use numbers, just numbers.
And you can, there's a couple of companies that have done this every year, and they show some historical trends. And every time sort of the notice goes out that you should start using longer passwords, it went from 1-3-4-5 to 1-3-4-5-6.
Yeah.
And then a couple, 3 years ago, it went to 7 and then 8. And so there's a longer password. All right, how about 1-2-3-4-5-6?
Well,
a
lot of them are getting, and I know people find this, you know, this is a pain in the butt.
Yep.
Whereas they're requiring at least one uppercase, numbers, and
punctuation.
Some other type of punctuation.
Yep.
Oh, that's going to be hard for me to remember. Then fine. You know what? Just put down the 11111 and let somebody hack your account, and then don't complain to me.
That's right.
You know, because we've warned you plenty of times to take the time and effort.
Look,
I mean, even Chrome, though.
Yeah.
Chrome will, even if you come up with obscure passwords, Chrome will remember them for you.
Right. Yep. If you use a password manager like LastPass or EndPass or whatever, one of the things that they do is generate passwords. I've currently got my system generating 42 character passwords.
Nothing wrong with that.
Are they impossible to remember? Yes, that's the whole point.
Yes.
LastPass will insert them for me. I'm using EndPass, will insert them for me. So I don't have to remember them, but if I need to look them up, they're in EndPass. I'm good to go. And EndPass will talk to all my devices, and so everybody wins.
A lot of the sites now, when you create a password, will give you a strength meter.
Right.
And they'll say if the password is weak or long. But because of all the leaked passwords and the statistical analysis. Sites that require a punctuation mark, exclamation point is almost always used as the last character. Sites that require a number, a one, is almost always used as the last character. So don't do that.
Right.
Because that's what the bad guys are now looking for.
Yeah. Right. Right. If they break that, they're way ahead in breaking your whole password.
That's one other thing. You know, that's why I don't use any other browser. I love the Chrome. And that, you know, I can put in all these goofy different passwords.
Right, and it remembers them.
And whether I'm upstairs on my computer upstairs or I go downstairs and I open up Chrome, it remembers.
Right, because it saves it as, because you've logged in with your Gmail account, it saves it in your Google Docs, in your Google Drive.
Yeah.
And Firefox will do the same thing if you log in. And have set it up to do that. It will remember your stuff. But whichever one you use, use it. And if you're keeping track outside of that, use a password manager. Like I said, I use NPass, which also, by the way, saves in my Google Drive with very high encryption. So I don't really worry about that. If I ever read that it's been hacked, then I'll change it. Until then, I'm good.
And your passwords don't have to be cryptic. Long is better than cryptic that you won't remember anyway, so you're going to write it down and someone can find it. So we use the example Happy 34 Monkey. Two words with some numbers. That's a long password, so it will take a long time to break in a brute force attack. And the words aren't related to each other, so that's a pretty good password.
Well, like we've said before, there's so many sites that you can go out there and test the strength of your password.
Right.
And, you know, you just sit there, take a few minutes, and put in different passwords that you've written down in combinations and see how strong they are.
Right.
If the information is that important to you and you're worried about getting, you know, hacked or broken into, then don't complain because they're trying to make it a little more secure for you and it's going to take a little more effort.
And a lot of people always say, well, I don't have anything worth stealing. But you have an identity and you have anonymity for the bad guy. If he uses your account to break into the bank, then you're the one that gets in trouble.
Yep. And he opened up all these charge cards and that in your name. And oh yeah, he also got a car loan.
Yep.
You know, for a $30,000 car, you know, because nowadays you can sit there and order cars online.
Yep.
And they'll deliver it to your house.
I like that one ad that has the car vending machine.
Yeah, car vending. Yeah.
Yep.
So password reuse is then an issue too. You use the same password on multiple sites. One site gets leaked, and then the bad guys use that leaked password on all the other sites. So most of the password managers now will warn you if you've used the same password on multiple sites.
Right. So you want to be careful. You want long passwords. On the Tango page, we are saying that you want a 17 character password. Honestly, if you're using a password manager, make it longer.
I'd say I vote for 20 at least.
I say I say 24. Like I said, I'm using 43, but 43.
Start with 20 and work up from there.
Well, because the problem is some websites won't accept passwords that long.
Right.
Which is stupid. That means they're using a fixed field length, which means it's probably written in COBOL.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, the probability of cracking it is a lot.
So a 50-year-old computer.
There's a thing called rainbow tables, and you can download them all over the particularly the dark web, but also the regular web. And the last I looked, and I really, since I've retired, I haven't paid that much attention, but 4 years ago, they were up to 17 characters. And what that is a disk you stick in somebody's computer and boot it up and it runs, it boots from there. So you got to be careful of how you allow things to boot in your computer. But what it then does is has just a bunch of lookup tables, and lookup tables are fast. And what happens is Microsoft has, of course, not changed their password security algorithm since Windows I think
NT.
three.
NT.
I'd just say
NT.
three.
Line manager 4.
What?
Land Manager 4.
Land Manager 4, exactly right. Which was what? I think 1640, somewhere around there, yeah. So the basic idea is that everybody knows the Microsoft algorithm. And so what they've done is they've just taken every single combination of characters and put them up to 17 characters, which was the last rainbow table I saw, and ran them through the algorithm and made a list. So now they just check the list. So they grab your encrypted password and just check it against the list. And it tells them what the password is. So your password needs to be longer than the rainbow tables.
And mm-hmm. and that's just for sites that encrypt their passwords. Many of these leaks we've seen, the passwords are not even encrypted. They're stored in plain text.
Right.
Or what's worse, the hint is stored in plain text. Yeah. Do not make your hint so easy that anyone reading it would know it. It's supposed to be so that you would remember the password. You know, don't make your hint, won the 1990 World Series.
Okay, or like they say, what's your favorite animal? Blue.
Lie. Yeah. Exactly, yep. Right.
It
lie.
Doesn't care.
When we were setting up my wife's laptop, one of the things it asked for a security question. I said, I think, okay, so write this, because she writes things down. She's going to put them in her little NPass thing. I said, the thing is, what was your mother's maiden name? She says, okay. And she said her mother's maiden name. I said, No. This is your mother's maiden name. And she just got this look on her face, the sudden realization she could lie to Microsoft and it would be okay.
Yeah. You can lie to any of them.
Yes. Never tell the truth in those things. Pick something wrong.
And it's just the same with, say, even on bank security. You know, they'll ask you questions. You know, your questions to prompt that they know you're you. Again, lie to them. The software does not care.
The software is not going to come back and say your mother's maiden name wasn't Blue.
Right. Or if you sit there and say, what's the last street you lived on? Orange.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter. And that's what you got to do. But write those down.
What was the name of your first pet? Platypus.
Yeah.
No, don't even do that, because a platypus is an animal.
Yeah.
That's where you pick something else. Mount Shasta. Mm-hmm. My dog's name was Mount Shasta. Shut up and write it down.
Because Ford. Because your other dog's name was Shasta?
Shasta. Yeah, that's easy. But yeah, so you need to pay attention to what you're doing with these things. It doesn't take much. And again, people are just going to say, oh, I can't remember all that. You don't have to remember all that. That's why there are password managers.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes they're called password vaults.
It's just like we go back to backing up.
People don't think they're smart enough.
People don't want to take the time. Right. Oh, it's so inconvenient. Just like I said, when they won't take the time to even back up their stuff. But yet you'll hear them crying the loudest when all of a sudden these great pictures and everything else that you wanted to save for decades and pass on down are now lost forever.
That's right.
Because they never took the time to do it.
I've said this before. I was a system administrator for 20 years. So as a system administrator, you cannot be paranoid enough. I have 3 backups of all of my pictures,
mm-hmm.
not counting the fact that it's also on my hard drive.
Right.
Right. So it's 3 backups. And two of them are off site, off my computer entirely. One of them is on a separate drive in my home, but not on my computer. And the likelihood that all 4 of those devices will go at once is very, very slender. So I'm feeling okay about it. But be very careful when you back up first. And then secondly, use a password manager and pick a password. Let it pick a password. This is the thing we always get. I can't think of a password. Okay, you don't have to.
Yeah.
The password manager will do that for you.
Automatically.
And so you don't have to think of a thing ever. Right. How much easier can it get than that? All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Doug from Webster, New York. Hiya, Doug. What's up?
Hey, thank you for your show.
Thanks.
About a year ago, something called net neutrality came along. And can you explain what has happened since net neutrality went in place?
That's a toughie.
I'm finding my searches to be much, they're collected with people that will pay to have their site put at the top. And I'm finding searching to be harder.
Yeah. Here's the thing. We used to have a thing. The basic concept of net neutrality is that all internet traffic should be treated equally.
Or neutral.
Right, neutrally. Right, yeah. Right. And so...
I wonder if we'd have called it net equality, it would have caught on better.
Yeah. And basically the idea is that without net neutrality, a search engine can decide to put something to get paid. Google does it. Bing does it. Yahoo does it. When you look at search results, the first set of search results are ads. They are paid for. Now, Google is honest enough to tell you they're ads, which is nice. But they're
Although
ads.
You have to notice that little ad
symbol. You have to notice it, but if you it's train there. Yourself yeah. to still look for it, you see it. and the basic idea was net neutrality was really designed to prevent large internet service providers from slowing down content from their competitors.
And the initial cases were Netflix, where Comcast was slowing down Netflix because Comcast also had a streaming video service. And right. so they wanted you to use theirs, not Netflix.
Right. So people like Spectrum have their own entertainment streams. And so they, you know, the net neutrality law said they could not slow down Netflix in favor of their own services. Now, net neutrality is gone. It was voted out a couple of years ago. So net neutrality is gone, which means that if Spectrum wanted, I'm not saying they are, because I don't know, because I don't have Spectrum as my internet service provider. But if Spectrum or Comcast or anybody else wanted to slow down Netflix or Hulu or whatever, they have that right now. They can do that now. And if an internet search engine wants to accept money to bring up, to raise the awareness of certain sites over others, they have the right to do that.
Wow.
Yeah, well, that's what our legislators decided was in our best interests.
Well, that's what the chairman of the FCC decided was in our best interest.
Right. So, you can blame Ajit Pai.
When he repealed that regulation, a lot of states, including New York, are trying to push through their own independent net neutrality laws. And the federal government is pushing back, saying that's a federal thing, not a state thing. Because if say, New York passes a net neutrality law, all the companies are going to have to be neutral in New York, so they might as well be neutral everywhere else.
Right. It's easier to be neutral everywhere than it is to do it by state. But, yeah, so that's in a nutshell, that is net neutrality. And we don't have it.
And actually, friend of the show, Phil Dunpier on Stop the Cap, just published an article this week that Chairman Pai is trumpeting his claims of net neutrality not hurting by saying all this great stuff happened, and he's basically distorting the truth.
Yeah, or as we call it, lying.
Yeah, the companies are increasing their internet systems, companies are upgrading their networks, and that's all because net neutrality was revoked. No, it's because customers are demanding faster internet.
Right. That's yes. Yeah. At any rate, so that's net neutrality.
Can I ask a photo question?
Yeah.
I have a Apple. When I'm sitting in front of my iMac, I can label and add text to, I like to label pictures. But when I'm using my iPad, I can't do that. Or should I be able to? And I don't know how.
What operating system are you running on your iPad?
I just got it in January, so I'm going to say 10.4.
Yeah, it's probably the latest. Well, the latest version is 12.2. We were mentioning a little earlier, there is a button called Markup. And on the iPad, it's a little circle with three dots on it. So when you go in to edit a photo, you have to tap that little circle. Then you can hit the markup button, And one of the things markup lets you do is draw lines on your photo. And then, I'm going to find an article for this too, then there's a little plus button to do more things, and one of the things you can do is add text to the photo.
Oh, all right. So the circle with three dots.
Circle with three dots, yep, and then a plus.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Yep.
Thanks, so everybody.
Thanks.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Bye. A lot of times the features are in there, they're just hiding until someone tells you.
Yeah. And part of the issue, of course, has always been we want to make things easier for people, and not everybody speaks English.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make a program or an operating system that runs internationally, so you can't use any given language. So you have two choices. One is to allow people to pick their languages. That's hard.
Yep.
It's hard to write the code correctly and then find somebody to do a good translation. So you don't end up with the kind of silly stuff that they put on places like English.com and stuff like that.
Yeah.
People have gone to icons, but not everything lends itself to an easily recognizable icon. I mean, some are obvious. Do you want to do something with your Bluetooth? Well, there's a Bluetooth icon, and everybody knows what that icon is. What's the markup? Or mark down, or mark left, or whatever.
Which are all different things.
Right.
Different real things.
Right. What is that icon? Well, there isn't one, honestly.
And if you added all the icons that there are features, there would be no screen space to do anything with. That was Microsoft's problem for a long time. You turn on all the tool buttons, and then there's no place to type your text.
Right. That's exactly right. All right. That music tells me you wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but don't go away. You're going to get a chance to do it all again. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. On this snowy April day, it's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Continuing the password theme, for many years, Microsoft has published a security baseline configuration, a set of system policies that are reasonable defaults for a typical organization. This configuration may be sufficient for some companies, and it represents a good starting point for those corporations that need something stricter. While most of the settings have been unproblematic, one particular decision has long drawn the ire of end users and help desks alike. I hated this. A 60-day password expiration policy that forced a password change every 2 months. That reality is no longer. The latest draft of the baseline configuration for Windows 10 version 1903 and Windows Server version 1903 drops this tedious requirement. The rationale...
And the guy that originally came up with that requirement did so randomly and has since apologized.
Yes, he should. He well should. The rationale for the previous policy is that it limits the impact a stolen password can have. A stolen password will automatically become invalid after at most 60 days. In reality, however, password expiration tends to make systems less safe, not more, because computer users don't like picking or remembering new passwords. Instead, they'll do something like pick a simple password and then increment a number on the end of the password. You know you've done it. Every single person out there listening has done it, making it easy to generate a new password whenever they're forced to. In the early days of computing, this might have been a sensible trade-off because cracking passwords was relatively slow. But these days, with rainbow tables, GPU acceleration, and the massive computational power of the cloud, that's no longer the case. Short passwords are a liability. 16-character passwords can be broken in an hour. Pay attention to that. 16-character passwords can be broken in an hour. Short passwords are a liability, so any policy that makes people favor short passwords is a bad policy. It's better instead to choose a long password and ideally multi-factor authentication, supplementing the password with a time-based code or something similar. In the new baseline, Microsoft is also considering dropping the long-standing requirement to disable the guest account and the default administrator account. Windows 10 disables the guest account by default already, meaning that if it's enabled, it's probably for good reason and shouldn't have been picked up in an audit. See, most of this is for the auditing people, because auditors, as a group, not tremendously imaginative people. And so if there's a checkbox on a list, you dang well better be hitting that checkbox. That's the way that works. So the built-in administrator account is also disabled by default in Windows 10, with the operating system creating a separate administrator privileged account during installation. However, the built-in account has certain properties that make it better. It isn't subject to account lockout policies. It can't be removed from the administrator group. As such, the decision to use the built-in administrator account or a different one is more a matter of taste than security. So, how good is your password? Give us a call, but don't tell us your password. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Now, I wish, make a note of this, I wish Apple would follow Microsoft's lead on their account creation. Yeah.
They stole my heart.
When you set up your first user on Windows, it's a standard user, and you have to escalate to admin privileges. Which is easy to do, so it's not as good as it could be.
Right. But you have to actually do it, right. And that's something.
Yeah. On the Mac, the first user you create is the administrator. I wish they sort of did the same thing. Make a standard user first and say, okay, how about an admin password for other things? Because a lot of the time, I think a lot of the studies have reported that you could stop 95% of malware by not running as an admin.
Yep.
If you're just a standard user, then you don't have administration rights to install new software.
And most of the stuff won't install. You'll get a warning.
Yeah.
And if you're sitting there writing a text and you get a warning that says, I need to install this software, you might stop for a moment and think, really?
Yeah, and say no. But, so that would be a big step forward in security, is if everyone runs as a standard user. And then leave the administrator user for things that actually need administration, which is usually just installing software. And most people never do that. They use the software that came with their computer, or when they get the computer, they buy a couple of things and then hardly ever buy anything else.
Right. So why are you running as administrator and leaving yourself open in that security way? Linux does the same thing. There is a root user who most of the distributions nowadays doesn't have a password associated with it. And if you want to run something as the administrator, you A, have to be in the administrator group, and B, you then use a program called sudo, S-U-D-O. And sudo says, run as if I were the administrator. Okay, give me your password. Now I'll run this. So I have to do two things. I have to start my command with the word sudo, or I use gksudo and do it in the GUI. And then I have to also give it my password. So I've got two chances to stop and say, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, two chances should be enough for anybody. At any rate, back to the phones. Our next caller is Richard from Rochester, New York. Hi, Richard, what's up?
Hey, I have a problem. Before that, after what you just said, isn't there a way to require a window to come up, even when you're running it as administrator, before anything can be installed?
That was the user access controls that they introduced in Vista. And yes,
I'm talking about Apple.
Well, yeah,
Mac.
Oh. If it's installing in your local user, it often does not need password. It just does it. If you're installing in the system level, it needs a system password.
If you're logged in as administrator.
Right. Because you already are an administrator, so it just installs.
So what you want to do is, if you are currently using, well, if you're setting up a new Mac.
Well, even if you're with your current Mac, you want to make
Let's start with a new Mac. If you've got a new Mac, the first person you the first username you create is the administrator. So make that one that you don't normally use,
right.
And then from there create another user who's your average user and do everything in that average user. Now, if you're already logged in,
if you're already logged in as the administrator user, make a new user that is an administrator.
Okay.
Log in to that administrator, and then change the account you've been using to a standard account.
Got it.
So you can un-administer it? Yeah.
Yes.
You un-administer can, it. Still
yeah, you can remove administrator rights. Yeah.
Okay. Now, on to my real question. I have a problem. I'm suffering from multiple Apple ID disorder.
Yeah.
Somehow I've acquired two Apple IDs, and on some I've got a MacBook, I've got a phone, I've got a Chromebook, and on some of them, one ID is for the cloud, and the other is for the Apple Store, and on some of them it's the opposite. And I'm just, and it seems to be impossible to combine them. I'm wondering if there's a way to do that.
There is sort of a way to combine them through the iCloud family sharing. You assign one ID to be your family master. And so on one device that uses that ID, you create an iCloud family and add the other ID to it. And that lets you share the things that that ID has purchased. It's generally intended to share music and app purchases in a family, but you can be a family of yourself if you have multiple IDs.
Right. I'm not worried about this. I haven't really purchased anything. It's just to so that I don't have to have two cloud accounts for backing up. That's
right.
Really where it comes in.
Now, well, you may want two accounts for backing up because you're only given 5 gigs of free space per account.
I went up to 50 gigs on both of them because I needed to.
Yeah, so that does make me think it's their separate accounts. Because one thing that you can do when you create your Apple ID, most people use their internet service provider's address, so say roadrunner.com. Right. And then you say, I want to use Apple Mail. It makes an iCloud.com address that's tied to your roadrunner.com ID. So it's one account with two addresses. That's a little easier to fix than having two separate accounts.
I'm not sure whether. I think I have two separate accounts.
Yeah.
I think when I bought my phone, which was way after I was using everything else, that I even forgot. Anyway, it wound up that way.
So yeah. And
definitely
so,
two separate accounts.
Yep. So it used to be you couldn't delete an Apple ID. You just had to stop using it. So you would sign out of your Apple ID on all of those devices that use it and then turn off the extra storage you're paying for, or you're still going to pay for it.
Right.
But what Apple has recently done as part of the, GDPR in Europe, they have added the ability to actually delete an Apple ID from the accounts so that you can really delete one you're not using anymore. Now, again, anything you did purchase on that ID will be inaccessible to you, and you'll have to purchase it again. But right. For a lot of people, they haven't purchased anything, and you don't need to worry about it.
Right. No, that's the case. I've a few apps on the phone that are $1.99.
Yeah.
Just a few pieces of music. Nothing. Get excited about it at all. So I could delete one of these things and then just go back on with the other one.
Yeah. And in the Mac devices, it is possible to set up your iCloud preference, your message preference, and your FaceTime preference with different IDs. So that can be tricky because you have to go through each of those settings and make sure they're all set to the ID you want to use.
Right.
And that was kind of left over in the olden days that when the Apple ID first started, it was just used for iTunes Music. And then as Apple started expanding the services it offered, some people would create a new ID for the cloud thinking it had to be separate from the music, and it didn't. And then sometimes people forget their password and just make a new ID instead of resetting their password.
Right.
So this has been an issue for a decade. Ending up with multiple IDs, and the fix has been to make a family, but now you can actually have Apple delete your ID completely.
Got it. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yep,
thanks.
And you don't necessarily need to have a Mac. It's any Apple services. So a lot of Windows users have iPhones, and so you have an Apple ID on your phone that is synchronizing stuff with Apple. And then you put the Microsoft programs on it to synchronize it with the Microsoft. It's a little trickier on an Android phone to sync with Apple, but you can. Usually, if you have an Android phone, you use Google to do all your syncing on your Android and Apple devices. In fact, that's usually the easiest way if you're multi-platform, you know, Mac, Windows, and Android, use Google because they run in anything.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And that's one of the things to go back to backing up. I back up everything. One of the places I back up pictures, well, everything to, is Google Docs. But it's not the only place I back up to because, again, I'm paranoid.
Yep.
But it is so easy to do. Anytime I take a picture on my phone, it automatically goes up to my Google Photos account.
And Apple does that in its own services,
right.
But you only get 5 gigs of free storage, and photos can start taking up a lot of space.
Right. The lovely thing about Google is if you keep it under a 16-megapixel picture, it's free.
Which pretty much I don't think there's any smartphone cameras.
My old smartphone camera was 16 megapixels. Now it's 12.
Yep.
But it was 16 megapixels. And if you've got a camera that does like 24 or, you know, a real camera that does something better,
yep.
I still use those when I store those pictures up in Google. I tell Google, transform them down to 16 megapixels because those are just going out to people who are on other phones or computers. They're just going to look at them there. It doesn't,
or even if they try
that.
Printing them, they're
right.
Not going to have the quality of, you know,
right.
Some
right.
professional lab.
Right.
So why take up the space and the charges?
Right. Right. I have a very lovely real digital camera that takes very, very high resolution pictures. But when I saved them to my Google Photos account so that my sister-in-law could see them, my daughter can see them, back when my father-in-law was alive, he could see them, I downgraded them to fit in the free version because they were only ever going to look at them on their phones no reason not to. So, you know, it depends on what it needs. That's a backup that gives me a decent quality. I still have backups for the original quality. And of course, in terms of my phone, those are now all original quality anyway.
Mm.
Right. And of course, with the Pixel phone, you get free unlimited storage of any pictures.
Yeah.
So that's a separate issue, but you definitely have plenty of options to store pictures, and yes, even with Greenlight, when I stored 50,000 pictures up in my Google Cloud, it took a while. It took a few days to get everything up there, but it churned away and it did the job, and they're all up there now, and I've got pictures going back to the 70s that are up in there, and I can find all kinds of things.
Well, I'm getting closer. Each week, it keeps creeping up a little more. We're up to 60% now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, trying to get our neighborhood group to still, you know, sign up and everything else because I want that so bad.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. Trust
I mean,
me, you do.
500 megabit for, you know, for the price that they're offering. You know, it's unbelievable. And more homes.
Yep. That's the big thing.
I mean, this is the thing. And this is where, matter of fact, we had one of our texters was saying how, you know, Spectrum, you know, got a slap on the hand and supposedly they're going to expand. Well, even they're, I think, running a little scared right now because Tom Galisano really stepped up to the plate and is making it one heck of a game plan, expanding as much as he is. I mean,
right.
Facebook, you look all the time, they're adding more and more neighborhoods that some folks thought, oh, we'll never get it in our neighborhood. Greece, boom, you know, all over the city are getting the chance to do it. And that's going to cut into some of these other services because it's a lot faster, it's a lot cheaper. And more folks are now going to where, yeah, they don't want the, you know, the cable package. There's so many other services
right.
that they can get, like we've talked over the past couple of weeks, that if the folks take the time and do their homework, they can find other alternatives for cheaper.
Right. And also, let's not forget that when it comes to that sort of thing, if you have green light in your area, Spectrum will give you a better deal to keep their internet service. And as Dave said, you can it's a tick mark on your chart if you're selling your home to make sure you have fiber to your home. So if you're looking to increase the value of your home, that penny that you give to Greenlight is not a bad penny.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, the one thing I've been telling them. Well, I don't want to commit to it. I said, no, you're not. It's going to cost you all of a penny. One penny.
Right.
And it's just, and that's
not even your interest. And when they get enough people in your area, then they can start filing for permits.
Yeah, well, and that's the problem. Yeah. You know, the fact is that the what do they call it?
Zoning?
Easement.
The easement situation is very convoluted here in New York State, and certainly in Western New York, certainly in Rochester. Anyway, to the phones, our next caller is Ed from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Well, actually, it's Bob. I don't know how he got Ed on.
I don't know how he got Ed either. Doesn't matter.
Anyways, I fully understand the publicly discussed topic of neutrality and so forth.
Sure.
Favoring certain providers and so forth. But I got a question for you to let... What about, I'm having a brain cramp.
Welcome to the club.
What is quality of service which VoIP needs? VoIP needs priority to work, and they set that in QoS packets, but that's not treating all traffic equal.
Right.
Well, that's a protocol. That's not a company.
Right. So here's the deal with that.
Preferential treatment to certain traffic.
Well, and in fact, yes, that's what net neutrality prevented and no longer does.
So, for example, the local cable company offers VoIP telephone service. They should not be able to treat that better than, say, you know, Vonage VoIP service or Skype VoIP service.
Right.
Let's
take the example that happened out in California recently. During the big wildfires, the phone company out there was cutting off service to They were throttling the service to the firefighters because they had gone over their data caps.
Well, California is the land of nuts anyway.
Well, but the point, whether you like that or not, the fact is people died because they were throttling. And it's not California that did that. It was the phone companies out there that did that, and those are nationwide companies. Those are AT&T, and those are Verizon, and those are the companies that was doing it. It had nothing to do with California. California is just a place that it happened. So what happened is California introduced a bill that says you can't throttle our – and they were very specific. You can't throttle our first responders. But well, guess what? Exactly all of those companies are fighting it. They don't want net neutrality in any way, shape, or form. They don't want to lose a penny ever. They don't want to. And so they're fighting it. And the reason we no longer have net neutrality is because net neutrality was for the people, not for the companies.
Right, and then with the current administration, that didn't go over so well. But that isn't my exact question. As I understand it, VoIP will not work without preferential treatment set up in QoS packets, right?
No, untrue. Absolutely untrue. VoIP will not work if your internet service is too slow and you don't have QoS preferential treatment. But if you have 4 megabits per second or more, VoIP should work fine.
Okay, I was under the impression that it required QoS preferential treatment in order to work at all.
Well,
and why is the guy making the VoIP phone calls traffic more important than the guy playing EverQuest or whatever?
But it's not. And it's only if you have less than 4 megabits per second, which is very common in this area.
Yeah, I know.
And whether or not, so because don't forget, you get they all do it every one of them does it. You get up to X.
Yeah.
Right? And up to is Weasel words. And I understand why they do it. You can't always promise you're going to get 100%. But when it gets down to 10%, then you got a problem. And so while you may be paying for 10 megabits per second, you may only be getting 2, and that's certainly less than the 4 that is required for good VoIP service.
Well, I'm using Spectrum, and I'm happy with that. I get a solid 117 speed test every time. Well,
there you go. And that's good.
That's what we've said all along is you know, Time Warner offered 10, and you got 5, and you were mad. Spectrum offers 100. You get 110, 115, and you're happy.
Right. Under-promise.
Oh, no, I actually had good luck under Time Warner, too.
It depends on where you are.
Yeah.
When I was up at 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, because I don't sleep, I owned the internet, but at 7 and 8 o'clock at night, when the kids are theoretically at least done with their homework and start playing games, my internet speeds drop to nothing.
Well, that's simply because the parents didn't have them start doing chores.
Yeah.
Well, but anyways, I guess I had a misunderstanding about how VoIP works. I thought it needed to have the QoS preferential in order to work.
No, only if your internet speed is too slow.
All right. Have fun.
Yep. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
But yeah, so, when you've got 100 megabit or gigabit, then, you know, everybody can do video all day long and it's fine.
And 10 is sufficient.
10 is sufficient. But when you have less than that, video starts to be a little wonky. And when you get down below 4, VoIP, if you're down to 4 or 3 and the only traffic on your entire network is VoIP, you're fine. But when it's sharing with other people, it becomes a bit of an issue, because the fact is when you say 4, you're not really getting 4. There's collisions and everything else, and it pulls your effective rate lower because there has to be resending. So if you've got 4 gigabits and you have to resend every packet, you're essentially at 2 gigabits, right? Because you really can only get half the stuff there. All right, we're going to take a quick break while we put on a lederhosen. I'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesca. Don't worry, people on YouTube, we're not going to actually put on lederhosen. You're listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Well, here's an interesting story. Apple uses advanced facial recognition. It's definitely useful when it comes to unlocking your phone. But one New York teen states the company is actually to blame for his false arrest. As a result, 18-year-old Ousmane Ba, who has filed suit against Apple, requesting $1 billion for his trouble, as a last-ditch effort to, well, save face. The New York Post reports that, according to Ba, someone used a stolen ID, presumably his, and was caught later on trying to steal about $1,200 in items from an Apple store in Boston. Apparently, the ID didn't include a photo, and Apple took the man at his word and programmed their security systems to recognize the man's face as Ousmane Ba's. Ba states he was tangled up in busts by the same man in Manhattan, Delaware, and New Jersey. When Ba was arrested for these supposed crimes, investigators eventually determined that the man they saw stealing the Apple items in surveillance footage actually didn't look anything like Ba to begin with. Fortunately for Ba, all charges have been dropped in every state that he was accused to be stealing the variety of products in, except New Jersey. The case is still pending there at this time. You want to make this go away? We can help you make this go away. Oddly enough, Ba had no idea about the criminal mistake until he received a court summons from Boston Municipal Court in June. Must have been a bit of a shock for him. But Ba alleges that Apple utilizes in-store facial recognition software to track customers, which led to his false arrest. But according to Apple, the company doesn't actually utilize facial recognition in its stores. But somehow, even without it, they were able to tag his face and find him in each and every one of those stores. Anyway, are you still happy about facial recognition? Do you wear a cap and cowl now when you go into an Apple store? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. We have become very much a surveillance state. We carry stuff around in our pockets that tells everybody where we are all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Our computers have cameras in them. Every store you go into has cameras. You go into the Apple store. Not only are there cameras on the walls, but you will notice that every device has a camera in it.
You can't go driving around without, you know, security cameras all over the place.
And people have dash cams now.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's whole video channels on YouTube devoted to showing crashes in dash. It, clearly, if you have a dash cam, you will be in an accident. That's the lesson you learn from those dash cam channels.
That recent accident that just happened with the truck.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They
terrible.
Showed one kid on the news that had a dash cam, and, you know, it was facing back at him, and it caught the truck going by him, and evidently it took off his mirror on the passenger side.
Yep, yep.
Clipped off, and, you know, you see the expression on his face in that, but, yeah, it caught it speeding on by on the right-hand side.
Yep. And more and more people have dash cams, and yeah, the original channels were all in Russia because, I don't know, whatever. But they're all over America now. They're all over everywhere. Lots of people have dash cams. But to get back to the original point of surveillance in general, it is everywhere. And, mm-hmm. and it has become, because everything is, we have is electronic, everything we have goes out into the cloud somewhere. It's very easy to track people as they wander about their day. Well, you can turn it off on Google, I know, and I'm sure on Apple you can as well. You can turn off tracking. But the reality is that most of us don't. And so one of the things that I forget what they call them, but Google...
curmudgeon?
I'm a curmudgeon, yes. There are a lot of other things I am that can't say on the radio. But I'm a Google guide. That's it. I'm a Google guide. So I do reviews of places and people mm-hmm. look at my photos and blah, 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 blah. But every month I get a little thing from Google that shows me where I've been all month. Oh. All the places. It shows me the routes that I took.
Mm-hmm.
It shows me everything. As a Google guide, I accept that.
Right? Well, even if you turn it off on your phone, I mean, you can't go on most highways now without some, you know, like 390, 490, 590. They've got cameras all over the place. So, yeah, they can see your car going this direction or that direction and zoom in on it. So, yeah, you can do it one, but they're looking all over the place.
That's exactly right.
And a lot of folks don't notice it, you know, even on storefronts and everything else, because of burglaries and everything else, they're running cameras all the time.
I always like waving to the cameras when I see them, because, you know, there's some poor security guard watching those cameras all day long with nothing else to do.
Every once in a while, I just say something rude about Amazon or Google.
Yeah.
So that my Echo Dot or my Google Home will send that to somebody. I just
hey, Alaska, blankety blank.
That's exactly right. There's got to be somebody at Amazon and somebody else at Google who think I have Tourette's. I'm swearing at them all the, it's just, you know, it's just every once in a while, because particularly since I've been doing security stuff, I read about this stuff all the time, and every time I do, I then go, hey, Alaska, blankety blank.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And the horse you rode in on. So, yeah, we're being tracked, we're being listened to. The reality is about 99% of the time, if they're listening into me, they're hearing Jazz 90.1 in the background and nothing else. My chair creaks once in a while. That's what they're hearing. It's got to be the dullest thing
but
anybody can listen in on.
You know, might as well have fun with it. It's right. Just part of our lives, and, you know, you can't help it. That's the way it is, and you got to roll with it.
Right, right. And the fact is that you have to be aware, and if you want privacy, it's getting harder and harder.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, so many folks, you know, sit there and complain that, you know, oh, Big Brother's watching, you know, and like anything else, there's the good sides and the bad sides.
And the irony is, in the book, it was government that was doing all the surveilling.
Right.
And in reality, it's private companies that we intentionally give our information to.
Well, yeah. When they sell it back to the government.
Yeah.
But they sell it to the government. God bless capitalism, I have to say. But so yeah, it's a very wide
just
open
a touch
world.
Of irony.
With just a touch of irony.
But it's a double edged sword.
It really is. You know, the you hear on the one hand, you hear the stories of stalkers who've gotten your information off the dark web or whatever, and on the other hand, you hear about people whose lives were saved because somebody heard something
like the OnStar and all this other stuff. Right. You know, I mean, it saved countless folks. We just got in, you know, which is true. People get in accidents and it sets off the alarms in the car, and that can save lives.
Yep. And so it is, as he says, a two-edged sword, and we just have to be both aware and more careful. But one of my favorite things is they're showing, there was a channel that was showing how to do makeup that will fool the facial recognition systems.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's like you have reds and yellows and blues all over your face. It may be that you fool the facial recognition system, but you're pretty obviously the guy with red and blue and yellow all over his face. So it's kind of not as useful as you might think. I do know that they have an issue over in mostly, I think it's China, where a lot of people walk around with masks.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the pollution.
Yeah.
And that effectively covers your face.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And because so many people do it, if you're a thief, all you have to do is put on one of those white mouth
face masks.
Yeah. And you're good to go. But yeah, it's a serious issue that we haven't.
Well, they do that
really
quite
addressed.
About out in California too, LA and that.
Right.
Some folks out there, I know a couple of my cousins out there periodically have to because of the air quality and everything else, and the smog. You know, you can just as you're driving into the city, if you can just see it sort of hovering over it like a big cloud, and well, that's what it is, but
right.
Really hurts.
Yeah, a lot of people having trouble. Friend of mine has just had a child out in California, and they're unhappy with how this kid is gonna grow up. I mean, you know, what do you do?
I'm sorry, they can sit there, you know, and I mean, they've done enough computer modeling to show that, you know, there is some effects to climate control.
Right.
You know, I mean, we burned already a hole up in the ozone up there in North Pole.
It was aerosols. So
yeah.
Man can make changes to the planet as a whole.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, and they've done it with the modeling, though, to show that how much our patterns have changed so much that back in the day, that's just the way it is. Now, because of computers and everything else, they've got statistics and they can track stuff and patterns and actually put some, you know, knowledge behind these statements that they're doing. They're just not blanket statements that, you know, oh, yeah, the water. Because let's face it, especially here in Rochester, a lot of folks can, I don't think, deny how much the weather has changed here.
Right.
I mean, I remember as a kid back in the 50s and 60s, we'd have storms that, I mean, you were hunkered down for 3-4 days.
Yep. We joke about ho ho ho. It's May 27th and we have snow. But I remember as a kid, I was a GCB, good Catholic boy, went to Catholic school. May Day, May 1st, we would all troop over to church and then troop back. And dang near every year, we had winter coats and boots on, and all the little girls were angry because they had just bought beautiful new May Day dresses and they couldn't show them off. And so we used to have much colder weather back then, and it's much different now.
Yeah, no, it's definitely changed.
Did you dance around the maypole?
Yes. Yes, we did.
In your new May Day dress?
In my new May Day dress. I have great gams.
Yes, he does.
Yes, I do.
I can attest to that.
And I look good in it. Yep. So let's not forget that.
He looked different in a dress.
I do. I look good in a dress.
Yeah,
I do.
Didn't have the beard even.
I didn't have a mustache.
Yeah.
But I didn't have the beard. I've got pictures of that somewhere. I mean, I didn't even have the mustache in those. We had a lot of snow back then, and I remember, of course, I was shorter then, but I remember piles of snow on the side of the road that were taller than I was.
I think it was the winter of, I believe, 65, 66. My dad actually had to park his car down. We lived over in Greece, had to park it at the end of the street because the snow was already 3 foot deep, and he had to walk it home. Because I was a paper boy back then. I didn't have a Democrat and Chronicle, and that was out every day. I can remember I didn't have to, in all the years that I delivered papers, didn't have to deliver the paper for 4 days because they couldn't
get them to you.
You couldn't get out. Nobody. We were literally snowballed. And I'll never forget this. Because my folks lived on Denice Road, we had this big picture window. We couldn't see out it for a while because the snow had drifted on up. We had to go up to the second floor to look out the windows.
A friend of mine from Watertown has pictures of him as a kid sledding out his second floor window.
Oh, that'd be cool.
He said it was the best, but yeah. I'm sure his parents weren't as thrilled.
Oh, yeah.
That big storm in the 70s that went up to second floor and the only thing that moved were snowmobiles.
Yep. It was, but it was a different time back then. Interestingly, talking about security and surveillance, the National Security Agency has actually formally recommended that the White House drop the phone surveillance program that's collecting all the data on our phone calls and text messages. They say that...
What? Go back? There is a phone surveillance program that's capturing all the data on our cell phones and text messages?
Yes. That's been there for a very long time. Yeah. Yes. The NSA runs it, the National Security Agency, and they have formally recommended that it be dropped because they say the logistical and legal burdens of maintaining the program outweigh any intelligence benefits that it brings. So one of the problems that all of this surveillance has been bringing is that you have this mountain of data that needs to be sorted through. And we see that a lot. There are lots and lots of jobs out there now for people who can deal with big data, as they're calling it.
Mm-hmm.
Massive amounts of data. How do you sort that? How do you sift through it? It certainly sounds easy, but let's go back to the earlier story where I put a list of 100,000, just passwords.
Yeah.
I went to sort them. Do you have any idea, even on an octa-core 3 gigahertz machine, how long it took to sort those in a text file?
Yeah.
It took a very, very long time. So when you've got billions upon billions of gigabytes of data, how do you sort it? How do you sift through it? How do you find things in it? That's a huge issue. And when you collect, as the phone and text message surveillance system does, it collects billions of records every single day. How do you sort through that? How do you search through that? Google has that problem. 400 hours of video are uploaded to YouTube every single minute. Think about that. 400 hours every single minute.
Yeah.
One of the things Google has to do, of course, is to check, is this porn? Is it not safe for work, not family friendly, whatever. You know, is it people dying? Is it whatever it is? Or is it revenge porn? Whatever, you know, whatever the things that are. How do you do that? How do you look at 400 hours of video every single minute? You know, stuff is going to get through. You know that's going to happen.
How many people are looking at the things that the computer algorithm kicked out? Yeah, you might want to look at this.
Yeah. Well, and that's just it. Yes, they have a computer algorithm that looks through some of it, but it doesn't always catch it. And A, stuff gets through. But B, stuff gets flagged, and then a human has to look at it. And we said this last week or the week before. They've got hundreds, if not thousands, of people all over the world who are looking at videos all the time because they have to. Google does it for YouTube. Google does it for Google Home. Amazon does it for the Echo stuff. They need people, humans, to look at the stuff that's flagged by the AI. And the AI, quite frankly, at this point at least, isn't all that good. So they have people who randomly listen into stuff. They have people who listen to things that are flagged. So if you say to Alaska, what time is it in Finland? What time is it in where? And they that gets flagged and sent to a person who says, oh, they said Singapore. Okay, so now we can send them the temperature in Singapore, whatever I just said. That sort of, if you mumble, if you have an accent, if you know whatever, you're more likely to get flagged for someone to listen in. Not because they want to know what you're saying. Well, they do. They want to know what you're saying so that they can answer you. They're not interested in you per se. They're interested in what it is that you're trying to say. And then they may add that to a database that says when somebody says they actually meant Singapore. But it happens. And we've all had experiences where suddenly Alaska or Google Home pops up and says, I didn't understand that. Well, it's because nobody was talking to you. Shut up. But it's because it heard something
yep.
that sounded like the trigger word, whether you said it or your television said it or your radio said it or whatever it is. All right, that's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. You need to call earlier and more often, Chicago style.
I especially want to thank Dennis for being able to cover me while I was away.
Dennis is wonderful. Yep. We're glad to have you back, but Dennis is wonderful. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. You're listening to Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in a mere 166 hours. Stay warm.